Broadcasting from the Prime Meridian Bank Studios in the capital city of Tallahassee, this is Front Row Knowles with Tom Block and Keith Jones. Front Row Knowles is brought to you by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way.
Tom Block, Keith Jones with you. This is Front Row Knowles, and this is week number one of spring practice. And every year we get more and more excited about spring practice, Keith, mainly because we're 1 week closer to the start of the season. Secondarily, because it's actual football.
Well, and probably more importantly, you're coming off a success because you can have a great spring, but if you still go 6-6, it doesn't mean much. But coming off of 13-1, it's pretty dang exciting.
Mike Norvell had a press conference on Monday, the team practice, and basically about three times a week for the next month or so, not culminating with the spring football game, because there's one more practice after
one
that.
One afterward, yep.
To clean up whatever mistakes are made in said spring football game. One of the points, and we'll talk with Bob Ferrante, our Osceola insider, in the next segment. I don't know if we'll dive into this too much, but Coach Norvell dropped a stat bomb, if you will, that FSU is one of only five schools in the country that returned its head coach and all 10 assistants. And we think about how transient the players are these days. Coaches have always been a little transient, but considering we had the Bowden era where there was just such continuity, and then we got into Jimbo and he would roll through some assistants, and then you changed head coaches and you changed head coaches again. It seems odd, but it's a testament to Norvell that here we are, and Florida State is once again on that continuity train.
And isn't it odd that we actually have the transfer portal as a result of coaches changing jobs so often? And now that we actually have the transfer portal, the school that's doing maybe, certainly amongst the top, is the staff that doesn't have any turnover. Karma is just interesting, is it not?
I think what it points to, though, even beyond that, Keith, and we've seen it the last 2 years, in spite of Florida State getting snubbed for the playoff, these coaches all had opportunities to go elsewhere. I mean, I don't know if to a man they did, but plenty of them had other opportunities. And whether or not they considered them lateral, I'm sure some were not lateral. Some would have been a bump in title and probably a bump in pay. The fact that they stayed speaks to what Florida State is and what they think they can accomplish at Florida State, even conference future uncertain at this point.
And, you know, it's hard to quantify. It's hard to say exactly what it is. It's as much art as it is science. But, you know, it does start at the head coach. And if that head coach is not someone you enjoy working for, yeah, money will keep you around for a while. And, yeah, success will keep you around for a while. But you're not going to stay there a long time if it's an untenable situation. So it starts at the top. And then it comes to your coordinators. And I think on both sides of the ball, the coordinators have established themselves in allowing their staff to have a authority and the responsibility to take on that authority and the ability to have input. You know, it's not my way or the highway. You know, it's a collaborative effort, collegial, all the other academic things that big words I'm learning, I still can't spell, that make this staff really, really special.
Well, it's a good point, and I would imagine we talk a lot about the players who come to FSU. They swear that Norvell is the same guy every day, same guy on Tuesday in the middle of August as he was on the recruiting pitch. And I would imagine, just think about the bosses you've had, you would prefer consistency there. And so his assistants know they're getting the same guy every day of the week as compared to, it's Wednesday and he didn't sleep well last night. What are we getting today?
Oh, I've got several comments. I'm not going to make any of them.
Perfect, because we're over time and we got to go to break, and we'll come back right after this with Bob Ferrante, our Osceola insider on Front Row Knowles.
Front Row Knowles is presented by Hobson Chevrolet of Cairo, Georgia. Get your best deal the Hobson way. Now back to Tom and Keith.
Is in the air. Spring practice going on for Florida State, and we are pleased, as always, to welcome our Osceola insider, Bob Frante, to the program. We will crank open that Earl Bacon Agency hotline to do so. The Earl Bacon Agency, ensuring your future together. Say hello to Bob. And Bob, it is good to be back at the Moore Athletic Center and Coach Norvell behind a mic and a podium for a press conference, because it means football is here. What are your thoughts as we start spring practice 24?
I think Mike Norvell did a good job on Monday of kind of delivering a state of the program address of where Florida State is entering the spring and coming out of the offseason strength and conditioning program. I think he's really valued what Josh Storms has done as far as player development and culture building, preparing these guys for the spring. And I think he says it something along these lines every year, but he feels like, looking at the numbers, the GPS numbers coming out of those workouts, that he's seeing, just more quality and quantity as far as the output from those veterans. So it's a positive view, obviously, like most coaches would be this time of year. It's almost like a spring training mentality, right? For every college football coach, you're very, very excited. You kind of want to see what the portal guys look like and see what those early and early freshmen look like. But it's really going to be an interesting time of year with so many new pieces for Florida State, and obviously so many exciting pieces moving on in the NFL too.
Bob, this is always curious to me, and it has been for 40 plus years, that you add weight, you add muscle. These kids are highly talented athletically, but unless and until you get them out there working 11 together, you got to be football players when everything is said and done. And this group seems to have a great mentality towards that.
I think, and Mike Norvell would probably say that goes back to the fit. It's about not just production. It's about your personality and your leadership, what you bring, whether you're a 18, 19-year-old, just graduated, senior of high school, or you've got a couple years of college football under your belt. He's really, I think, put a real emphasis on how you blend in, what you bring to each position room, what you bring to the big picture. And that's I think, maybe more challenging now that you're coming off a 13-1 season for Florida State. The expectation has, I think, incrementally ramped up with each offseason. But now it's gotten to a point of, hey, can Florida State match the latest version of Florida State? What can be brought out?
Well, just to add to the point about the strength and conditioning, guys, what jumped out at me, and I've been around many a spring practice, and we all know that every team gets bigger, stronger, faster in the offseason, right? But when Mike Norvell said that, from the metrics, Bob, this is the strongest team across the board Florida State has had, and then followed it up by saying it's the fastest team group of guys they've brought in, you'd rather start there than start with, they're middle of the pack in both those categories. Now we got to see how they can, how they can become football players.
Yeah. And things like, Patrick Payton has added on 15 pounds. It's like, wait a minute. Well, Patrick Payton's been adding weight ever since he got on campus. I feel like every year he's made that a goal. It's great that he's bigger. It's great that he's going to be that kind of menace off the edge. But it is almost amusing how he continually makes that good weight that he's adding. Same thing with Josh Farmer. It's good weight every year. And you look at him and you say, wow, that guy got bigger. And he's probably going to be it's going to make him more impactful.
I'm always amazed, guys. The baseball analogy is you can't coach 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Basketball, you can't coach height. So I guess in theory in football, you can't coach speed, but dang if I ain't coaching it up, because they are getting faster.
Yeah, I think that was also an emphasis too, though, for Mike Norvell going to the portal and finding speed guys, finding Jalen Lucas, Ja'Kai Douglas's brother, Jalen being an exceptional all Big Ten return guy up at Indiana, finding a Malik Benson, finding Jalen Brown. Some of these guys were relationships that the staff had at the high school level years ago, and it just didn't work out for whatever reason back then. But it seems like there is an accumulation of speed with this group. I think we maybe focus more of that on offense and less of that on defense. But that's not to say that these guys aren't fast at all. For example, a Marvin Jones Jr. Or a Sione Lolohia. Be very curious what a Sean Murphy, the linebacker from Alabama, looks like. You know, Earl Little, his dad having played in the NFL. Love to see what he looks like as a potential DB option for Florida State. So speed, I think, has been more of an emphasis point. Maybe just kind of looking around the various options in the portal. And yes, it's part of the best available thing, but it does feel like it maybe was truly an emphasis point just to accumulate that speed on both sides of the ball.
He was asked a lot about that on Monday and talked about it, he being Coach Norvell. What do you think this means for the offense overall, Bob? I mean, personally, as good as the offense was last year, I felt like it was better 2 years ago, and I think statistically it was. I'm excited that, or optimistic that, the short yardage situation will be better with such a big quarterback, whether it's goal line or third and fourth and short if you run DJU. But I'm also excited about stretching the field and what that opens up, because he's got a huge arm, and to complement the speed you just mentioned. I'm just interested to see how they tweak this offense and what the ceiling can be.
I am too. And Norvell said, you know, we've done a good job of stretching the field horizontally. I think that's probably a good reference to the screen game and throwing into the flat and using those tailbacks and getting some short yardage receptions. You know, for all of as great as Johnny Wilson was, as great as Keon Coleman was, they were not high end speed guys. They were not the burner types. What they did was they had crazy catch radius and they made, you know, quarterbacks and all offenses look good. These really could be, I don't think a lot of the current Florida State receivers outside of, say, Kentron and Ja'Kai have truly proven themselves at the college level at Florida State. They now have the opportunity to do so. And it could be by throwing deep. You know, we've seen DJU be successful as a downfield passer. That impacts your accuracy. I think we've hit on that in past weeks too. That does impact your accuracy. But when you can stretch a defense, it opens up a lot of other things. It opens up the short run. It should make a Roy Dell Williams' life easier, Lawrence Toafili's life easier. And like you said too, you know, DJU can have those short yardage running opportunities. So it is a very complimentary thing when you can throw that ball down the field.
Guys, I'm just trying to figure out what we're going to call this offense. It's got to have a name. We can't just call it Coach Norvell's offense or Florida State's offense. We've got to come up with a name. I haven't come up with anything. Any thoughts?
For playmakers, KJ, where you been? If you need to come up with an acronym for it, is that what we're working on?
Just something. It's not West Coast. It's not the wishbone. It's not the freeze option. It's not.
I do think, and Norvell was asked a little bit about this, and any good coach you would hope is doing some of this. Bob, way in here, I feel like this staff does a nice job of saying, okay, here's what this guy can do, and here's what this receiver can do, and here's what this running back can do, and here's a play that this guy can block and this tackle can't block. Now let's figure out what's left, and let's call the plays accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's knowing your roster, knowing your talent. Honestly, I was kind of critical of Coach Fisher for that years ago, for, you know, trying to force certain players to do things that they weren't exceptional at. Maybe asking James Blackman to do way too much when maybe the right play call was to hand off or to take the short pass. I think Mike Norvell knows the skill set of these guys exceedingly well. I think in part that's staff continuity. You know, Coach Norvell mentioning that they're one of the few programs around the country. They've retained the head coach. They've retained the 10 assistants. These guys know their current roster very well. They've had now 2+ months to get to know the early enrollees as well as the transfers. I think by the time they kick off in August, of course, it'll be an early start to July camp, so you'll have that extra week of camp to even get to know what these guys do well on the field even better. Plus, you know, tailoring what DJU does well as a passer. To the skills of the receivers, to the skills of what this offense can bring. I do think it's a coaching staff that is very adaptable and can make things work well around those skills of the players that they've got on the field.
Bob, is it fair for those of us that saw DJU play at Clemson to try to move forward from that? Is he similar to then? Is he much different than then? I know he's 2-3 years older. He's more mature. His body is built up a little bit, but can we take anything away from what he did at Clemson about what he might do for Florida State in 24?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at his numbers and some of his games at Oregon State, it didn't feel like he was as much of a runner at Oregon State. I do feel like that's going to be something that he will do more of at Florida State. Again, Mike Norvell is going to go for it on fourth and short. You can hand off, you can screen, or you can dump it off. But when you have 250 plus pounds of quarterback with an experienced veteran offensive line, I think DJU is going to run. Now, just looking back at some of his numbers, for example, like he ran it 100 plus times at Clemson in 21 and 22, only ran it 68 times in 2023 at Oregon State. Now you might say, well, that's not a lot of carries across a 12 plus game season. But it feels like those impactful situations within the game, those third and shorts, those fourth and shorts, are what where he could really make a difference as a runner. I think we kind of wondered as a media, you know, beat, as fans, should Jordan run more? Can Jordan run more? And maybe part of that was protecting him somewhat from a size and frame standpoint. With DJU, I think you've got that size and frame, and you're going to go use it if you're Florida State's coaching staff.
I feel like the make or break point, not the make or break, because it'll be a good offense. The good to great difference will be if these receivers develop, right? Because this is going to be, I think, probably the best offensive line group they've had, given the returners and what they brought in. You know they're going to be able to scheme up running the football. The tight ends will be good with who they brought in and who they return. But can these guys live up to the hype or fill those big shoes? So, Bob, I wrote down the order that Norvell mentioned the names. You tell me if you think this is how it shakes out. But for what it's worth, when asked about the receivers, he mentioned the guys in this order. Kentron, then Hakeem, then Dustin, then Ventravious Jacobs, then Darion Williamson, then Ja'Kai, then Malik Benson, then Jalen Brown, then Camden Fryer and B.J. Gibson. So I don't know if you can read between the lines on that or if they really are in a soup bowl and you see who ends up being super at the end.
It almost seems like he's deferential to the veterans, to the guys who have been on this roster a long time. I don't know until we really see these guys. Like, is Malik Benson that kind of burner that's going to be a tough one-on-one matchup? What about Jalen Brown too? What's great about this wide receiving core is we have their high school highlights. We know there's a bunch of four-star types in there. These are mostly all blue chips. I've always said, let me just see who can catch the ball in traffic consistently. Like, that's the ball game. Yes, if you can run past somebody and still hold on to it, that's great too. But we've seen a lot of heralded receivers come through here, and they just can't consistently hold on to that ball. I don't have a great feel for who those starting three might be. And part of it is, like, we all love Ja'Kai Douglas. I think we'd love him more if he were 6'2". We don't maybe look at him as that top end guy because he's in that 5'9", 5'10" range. But what Ja'Kai does is he gets the job done. And I think Kentron would have been a guy who got the job done last year if not for that August injury. Kentron was the star of the spring in 2023. They've got some guys there. But again, who is it? Or is it a collective group that comes out? I'll be very curious, you know, by April 20th, kind of where Florida State stands there.
That's the offensive side of the ledger. We're talking with Bob Frant there, Osceola Insider. By the way, Bob, I know you guys are busy covering spring. What you got going on at the Osceola right now for our listeners to check out?
Yeah, a lot of coverage from the luncheon with Mike Norvell, a lot of things from the first day of practice on Tuesday, of course, Florida State baseball. Now top 10 of a bunch of the polls. They played Stetson Tuesday night. So we've got a lot of different stories there. And, of course, women's basketball, you know, back in the big dance. They'll be playing Alabama in Austin, Texas on Friday. So it's March. It's a good time of year. It's an active time of year. And, you know, unfortunate that the men's basketball team isn't in the NIT, but we've got a lot of busy activity from all the sports across campus.
All right, sounds good. We'll continue our conversation with Bob, talk FSU defense right after this on Front Row Noles.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Front Row Knowles. We'll hear from Coach John Papuchis in just a minute. But, Bob, before we do that, he is, of course, the special teams coordinator and the defensive ends coach. What's your biggest thought, good or bad, about this defense as we go into spring practice?
I think the biggest question mark still is going to be linebacker. There are numbers. It's a good thing that DJ Lundy came back. I think Sean Murphy, looking at him in January when he did the interview, he looked a little more safety sized than in tour duty. He does look more linebacker size. I think that's a positive. You want to see development from Blake Nicholson, Justin Cryer, Omar Grant. There's a lot of good young pieces there at linebacker, but you want to see the depth built back up there at that position group. I think everybody will kind of have their eyes on the defensive line because that was where Florida State won football games last year. That pressure that Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, Fabian Lovett, Patrick Payton brought. And now it's Patrick Payton and some new faces. So what will we see from these new impactful transfers, or the coaches hope are impactful transfers? I think that's a curiosity point, and maybe we won't see it as much until some of these scrimmages in the spring. But Florida State has made itself into a really good defense because of sacks and quarterback pressures. That's what's made Florida State a successful program on the defensive side of the ball. And I think we're all kind of curious to see how that front four, and especially that front four plus the linebacker group, plays out.
Bob, that group, the last half of the season, last third of the season, was playing as well as any group in the country. I guess it's unrealistic to expect them to be at that level to start, but I'm wondering if we have to wait till halfway through the season for them to get back to it, or might they achieve it a little quicker?
Yeah, I think statistically, from a stat total, QB pressure total, it's going to be tough to live up to. I'm trying to remember if it was somewhere around 43 sacks last year, but it was up there. It got incrementally better through Norvell and Fuller's time. You know, what John Papuchis said, and I can't remember if that was part of the interview that Tom did or part of a later portion, but he feels like they're deeper at defensive end in 2024 versus 2023, meaning it's not just a focus on, say, Jared Verse and Patrick Payton. This time it's Marvin Jones Jr., it's Sione Lolohia, it's Tomiwa. You blend in Pat Payton, you blend in, say a Byron Turner. You've got different pieces. You can get to five guys, even Jaden Jones, right? You've got multiple numbers there so that you can withstand an injury if you get there. You've got, JP likes to have five just because that's the ideal number with a rotation, with a fifth complementary piece that can play strong side, weak side. So to hear that they feel like they're deeper at end, I think has to make a lot of Florida State fans excited about what's there. The flip side is you might not say they're as deep at tackle, but you're still getting Josh Farmer and Daryl Jackson back. So it's about development, developing your backups there at tackle. I think there's a lot of positives there in what you've got going into the spring with that defensive front.
Well, let's listen to that interview that you just mentioned with John Papuchis, and then we'll come back and we'll continue with the conversations, continuing about the defensive line. But here is defensive ends coach and special teams coordinator John Papuchis from Monday.
JP, as spring practice gets started, what are you most excited about?
Working with a bunch of new faces. Obviously we got some guys coming back, and there's some familiarity, but we have a lot of new guys on the roster that have been working really hard, and it's an opportunity to build a new team, and I'm excited about this group and what they've done through the winter conditioning, and excited to see what it's going to look like this spring for them as they start to gel as a unit.
There's always been new faces in college football, but the last few years and kind of the way college football is, there's even more new faces. How does that change how you structure practice and how you do things in terms of this period, that period, and just to get a better feel and get them integrated?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I'll speak first from a special teams perspective. You know, we are so fundamentally focused in everything we do from a special teams standpoint that you just got to be really mindful of the fact that there's going to be guys who are hearing things for the first time, doing things for the first time, and you don't want to slow the progression of your veterans that have been in the program, but you also don't want to leave behind some guys that you know are going to be critical to your program. So I think just finding that balance of what is the right rate of installation, what's the right rate of teaching, so you can maximize the veterans' potential and ability, but also get the new guys caught up to speed.
Pat Payton, where is he right now? Ready to take the next step, both on the field, being a leader, all that stuff?
You know, Pat's had a really good offseason. You know, his body has really changed a lot. I mean, he's gained 15 pounds and been able to hold it. You know, and I think that added weight and you know, continuing to get stronger in the weight room is going to help him be that complete player that he wants to be. You know, obviously last year he was an every down guy for us, but I think he wants to continue to grow because this is a critical year, obviously, for him and for everybody. And, you know, he's really done a good job at this point.
Given the success of the transfers you brought in at defensive end and the fact that his dad is a legend here, how is Marvin Jr. prepared to handle that?
Well, you know, Marvin has come in and worked, you know, and that's one thing that I've really appreciated about him. He from the first day of the winter program to the end, you could see the growth and improvement, not only physically, but just his confidence in terms of, you know, knowing what the expectation was and how our program operated. And, you know, I thought he got better every week that we had our off season. And, you know, I think he's excited for the opportunities ahead. This is the first time he's ever had a spring ball. His freshman year, obviously he showed up in June, so he didn't get the spring there. And last spring he had an injury. So I think just for his development, this is a critical spring, and I think he's looking forward to it.
About the other newcomers, what excites you there?
Well, you know, I think, both Sione and Tamawa are guys that you know I really was excited about in terms of the recruiting process, and they've really come in and done a great job acclimating within the room, but also a great job of working and trying to live up to what our standard is here as a program. So I think both those guys have a tremendous opportunity in front of them to be really impactful for us. So I'm excited about it.
And where does Byron fit?
Well, you know, Byron's had a really, really good offseason. And in every way, you know, he's had a really good offseason in the weight room. He's gained weight and been able to hold it. And he's doing a great job in the classroom. And I think all those things tie together in terms of his growth as a person and as a player. And, you know, I thought, you know, he was a guy that was able to kind of get, you know, his opportunity to play a role last year. And, you know, I think he's poised to see that role increase. And the great thing about the defensive end group right now is it's going to be a competitive room. And, you know, guys are going to have to take advantage of the reps they get in spring. And we'll see where it all kind of how it all plays out.
Thank you, JP.
Thank you.
Bob, before the interview, your point about the depth is right on. But I think the other point is maybe the top player in the group is not as good as what FSU's had, i.e., a Jared Verse. And that really is, it's the first question I asked JP, but how much can Patrick Payton grow? How good can he be? He's not opposite of Jared Verse, but he's got to be the lead dog.
I think how much more he can grow is 15 pounds more. And in some regard, that's good. I don't know. And in terms of growth, I look at defensive ends as, again, pressures and not necessarily sacks, because it's about how frequently can you disrupt the passer or make him throw a pass earlier or an errant, whatever. I'd almost prefer it to have a front four that can apply pressure more than just it's one guy. It's one. You'd love to have a Jared Verse, but in the absence of not having a Jared, give me the front four that Florida State might be putting out there, plus a couple more of the backup options. So can Patrick Payton become a 10 sack guy? Maybe. Maybe he doesn't have to either. I kind of like conceptually that they feel like, you know, at Florida State, they're going to rush four, and that's going to be their bread and butter. And then every now and then, they're going to rush a safety. They're going to rush a linebacker. They're going to give you some different looks. But they just feel like personnel-wise, they've got it up front to be able to put some pressure.
The back end, Bob, my estimation, I'd be interested in yours, at least as talented as any time in Norvell, and maybe the most talented with those corners and those safeties.
You know, Kidge, I think we talk about this just about every spring or preseason. We maybe get seduced by the talent of the group overall, but it's incredibly talented. And I think it starts to me with Shaheem Brown, a guy who really could be that captain, kind of the pre-snap alignment guy in the secondary, making sure everything is set from the snap. We loved what we saw from Conrad Hussey in practice, a pretty good practice player as a freshman right out of the gate. And he had takeaways, you know, for example, up at Pittsburgh when Florida State really needed him to come through. You know, your corners could be Trentrell Cypress, AZ Thomas. You could have a nickel of Greedy Vance, all experienced guys. We're not getting even deeper into that roster, into a Quindarius Jones, a Kevin Knowles, a freshman like Charles Lester or Jamari Howard that we know the staff loves. Can those guys get on the field? And is it more special teams and not defense this early? It feels deep. It feels like they've got a ton of options. You know, I was asking, you know, Coach Ford a little bit about reflecting on depth built on this defense. And I said, you know, 2022, there were some losses there because of, you know, the defensive tackle injuries. And right away said, well, not just there, safety too. At safety, we were moving guys around because of injury. So I think when you look at the depth piece, he's really pleased with just, it's not just the starter. It's who they've got maybe as the number two guy going in, and then maybe as a number three guy going in, and then they kind of evaluate those pieces throughout the spring. I think the depth there is something that's really, really excited them.
And that goes back, we talked about it a lot during the season, Bob, about how many guys they played on defense and how they rotated so liberally. I mean, Norvell talked about it Monday that they played, I think he said 24 guys, which he would know the number, but it felt like there was maybe 20 that were in there, whatever it is. As I worked through the roster, there are guys with a lot of experience. You mentioned like Shaheem Brown and AZ Thomas and the corners you mentioned, DJ Lundy and up front Farmer and Peyton. I mean, so the question to me is all incrementally better. Do they take that next step? Because if they do, I think from 1 to 24 or however many guys are going to play this year, they're probably the most talented is what they've been since Norvell and Fuller have been here.
Yeah, I think their top end talent is really pretty good. Maybe that's reflective of you're a fifth year coaching staff. You know, again, Coach Fuller saying he thinks he knows when he turns on the film and watches a prospect, a portal guy, a high school guy, that he has a really good feel for how they fit within the scheme, just because they've been around the various coaches long enough. They feel that like they have a good feel for the scheme. They can watch a guy, whether he's played at Oregon State or West Virginia, or whether he's at whatever high school they're recruiting. They feel like that guy, if he's got the right personality, he can come in and fit well within their scheme. I don't know, and I haven't studied, you know, for example, what another ACC program might do as far as how deep are they. I would argue, you know, without doing a ton of research, I'm not sure beyond a Florida State, beyond a Clemson, maybe a few other programs don't go nearly as deep as what Florida State can say that they go on offense and defense.
Bob, we appreciate your expertise or your expert insight, perhaps I should say. Have fun at spring practice. It's good to see the guys out there and actually have real-life football to cover, not just transfer portal and how much weight guys gained.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a good month watching these guys and just kind of seeing the development out there.
He is Bob Ferrante, our Osceola Insider. Keith and I will come back and put the wraps on this week's Front Row Noles right after this.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Noles podcast and follow at Front Row Noles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Back on Front Row Noles, Keith, we talked in broad strokes about this, but we're not the legal experts. So we have not tried to be or pretended to be. But this Friday is when they will actually be in a courtroom in North Carolina, and a judge will hear and I guess decide on at least a couple of things related to whether or not the case is going to stay in North Carolina and whether the ACC is going to have to make public lots of things that they would prefer not to.
I don't know that we'll know Friday. Obviously, testimony will be given oftentimes, at least anecdotally and experientially, and, you know, standing from far away, you know, the judge will say, well, I'll issue a ruling within the next 2 weeks. So I don't know if we'll know anything Friday, but it begins the process. And if you've kept up with any of it, and you and I are not recruit nicks, we don't keep up with recruiting. I've chosen not to be terribly up to date on all the filings and the things that are going on. It just appears that, there's going to be more behind the scenes than in the courtroom that end up in the resolution of this.
Appropriately for this part of the show, my dog just started going nuts at whatever's passing by. So that sort of makes sense. Yeah. I don't know where it will go, but this is in North Carolina. April 9th is when the suit in the state of Florida takes a turn. I'm just happy that every day that passes, we're one day closer to resolution, even though we don't know what that resolution is right now, but I'll point it. Go ahead. Jump in.
No, I'm just going to say, we don't know what the resolution is, but the more I hear, the more I look, and maybe this is wishful thinking on mine and your part, but I've not been dissuaded or discouraged by anything. I still think it's a reasonable chance that Florida State's going to get out of this in a reasonable way.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and we're the homers, right? Maybe that's overly optimistic. I mean, to me, this has felt like a negotiation from the word go, and it's sort of like playing poker. At what point are you going to fold the cards, or at what point is everybody comfortable with the figure? What is the ACC willing to accept? What is FSU willing to pay? That's the game we're in.
And if we knew that, if we had that crystal ball, we could charge a lot of money as a consultant, because somebody would pay us to relay that information.
Anyway, that's coming up on Friday as we're talking, and the show is not live. We recorded it earlier in the week. Before the baseball game, played Stetson. But to be the last remaining unbeaten team in college baseball, Keith, it does not mean that they are going to go to Omaha and they're going to win their first ever national title, although I'd love to say that that's what happened. It does mean that they're markedly improved from where they were a year ago. And if you watched them play at all, I think that's pretty inarguable. They run the bases better. They went all weekend and didn't commit an error. They're pitching better. The bats, maybe they weren't as great against Notre Dame and ACC pitching as they had been, but they're still pretty doggone good. There's a lot to like with what we're seeing in year two here right now.
Well, during the fall and over Christmas break, I had a one-on-one meeting with Link, and I said, Coach, I'm going to give you this bit of advice, and I'm not going to charge you for it. I've spent a lot of time. It's my own fault. I wish I could trademark it. But, you know, if you get your pitchers striking out people, there's less chance for errors. You just might want to think about that.
Well, that's akin to if you score more runs than the other team, you got a better chance to win, right? That kind of solid advice you're providing?
I think all of our listeners understand where I'm coming from.
Anyway, it's been fun to see that development. On the softball diamond, Inside the circle, Lonnie continues to work with her pitching staff, and that's really the biggest. I don't want to call it a hole because that's not fair. The bar has been set so high. What it is players with talent that need experience, and they're gaining experience, and we'll see where they are in April, May.
Yeah, last two or three, four years, you had talented players with experience in the circle. Now you've got talented players that need experience, and the age old, the only way you get it is going against some good squads. I mean, if they win that game in overtime, they end up taking the series. So, I mean, they're right there. There's more work to do. Lonnie would be the first to tell you, but I have complete confidence in what they'll be able to be, 30, 60 days from now.
Keith, we have overstayed our welcome once again. We are out of time. I will catch up with you next week. Folks, thanks for tuning in. This is Front Row Noles.